Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, our last for the week, actually. We'll be off tomorrow for the anticipation of the July 4th holiday, but we're here today, and we've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, it's a strange world when our good martini is that it looks like Joe Biden will be running for president of the United States. This is according to the Washington Times. Vice President Joseph R. Biden's team is putting out the word that he is leaning in favor of joining the presidential race next month, according to a prominent Democratic fundraiser. The Veep's entrance would dramatically shake up the Democratic contest, confronting frontrunner Hillary Rodham Clinton with a formidable opponent who is equally well-known across the country and poised to tap a network of major donors. Fundraiser John Cooper says, "I'm as confident as I can be that he will be entering the race." And he says, "Many of Mr. Obama's bundlers, including himself, could not get excited about Mrs. Clinton's campaign, with some resigned to sitting out the presidential race next year and others eagerly searching for an alternative candidate who inspires them." He says Mr. Biden would fit the bill easily. Quote, "It was almost a diametrically opposed reaction than to Hillary. With Hillary, no excitement. They couldn't get enthusiastic about her for whatever reason. But when I mentioned that maybe Biden was going to enter the race, there was palpable excitement. They're chomping at the bit to raise money for Biden." Now, of course, we never want Joe Biden to be president of the United States, but it definitely pinches Hillary since Bernie Sanders is already running to her left, and obviously Biden will be running as the continuation of Obama.
Yeah, for people who are asking, how is this the good martini today, Greg? One, entertainment value.
Yes.
Can you think of anything better than having Joe Biden out in front of the country day after day, cameras rolling, and him being asked to, one, defend the Obama administration's record, two, defend his past statements and occasional moments that are a little perplexing, three, him on the attack against Hillary Clinton. And then just, you know, just a general sense of all the fun that comes from Joe Biden. I think also you're right. The one downside might be, you know, Bernie Sanders has actually been getting some traction in Iowa and New Hampshire right now.
Yes.
So maybe this is kind of splitting the anti-Hillary vote amongst Democrats. But again, if this does actually occur and that there's genuine enthusiasm for Joe Biden by comparison to Hillary Clinton, one, it says – I think this is a genuine nice sign of life in the Democratic Party, that it is not this like zombie that has been taken over by the Clinton Foundation and it's just simply it does whatever is told of it, that they actually want a choice. They actually want a debate. And while they're several light years to the left of where you and I would like them to be, it's better for the, you know, socialists of the Democratic Party. In the case of Sanders, I mean that literally. Literally, as to use one of Joe Biden's favorite words. Good for them to have this debate. And I think the more this debate goes on, the more it probably will drag them further to the left than any of them would like to be. I think it does create an awkward situation in which everyone's going to have to defend the Obama administration. They may actually compete for who has the best record of defending and enacting the Obama agenda at a time when the president's, you know, approval rating has been in the 40s for a good long time now. And it's sputtering along and he's no longer the messiah figure. He's another aged figure in this field. I mean, Martin O'Malley can look around and say, "I'm the only one who doesn't qualify for the early bird special at Denny's."
Yes.
It's going to be fascinating to watch, you know, Sanders, Hillary, Joe Biden, Jim Webb. Is, I guess technically he's in there, although it feels like he's in the witness protection program. Nobody's seen him in a while. I mean, O'Malley's the baby of the group. And he's like 50 or so. So the future is in the hands of Biden, Sanders, and Hillary. Doesn't get any better than that. Well, let's look to tomorrow with the actuarial table challenged group of candidates right there, Greg.
If Biden actually gets in, this will be his third run for the presidency, and we can pretty much guarantee this will be his best run, even if he doesn't win the nomination, because he got knocked out before the first votes with the plagiarism scandal in '88, and then he got 0% in the 2008 Iowa caucuses. My favorite statistic heading into the 2008 vice presidential debate was that Sarah Palin had gotten more votes for mayor of Wasilla, Alaska than Joe Biden had in two runs for president. So obviously Biden got a few more votes once he got on the ticket. But that's
can I observe like one last thing about Biden? I think you and I have kind of addressed this before, that as much as we may disagree with the guy, as much as the time it sounds like his mouth runs away with him, he's said some things that are kind of, you know, if not obnoxious, certainly, you know, any other lawmaker would get in trouble for, of, you know, you can't work in a 7-Eleven unless you have a slight Indian accent or, you know, things like that. Going to put y'all back in chains and, you know, rather shameless demagoguery like that. But when you actually interact with Joe Biden, there seems to be a certain, I'm going to say genuineness there. And I don't know whether it's the, you know, family tragedies he's endured or just the fact that nobody who's that crazy and says that many, you know, spectacularly off the wall things is lying to you. He's almost too crazy to lie. You know, there's not a great deal of duplicity that comes off of Joe Biden. Insanity, maybe, but not duplicity. And so I actually think he's a much more likable figure for the Democrats than Hillary Clinton is. And we may remember back in that 2008 campaign where at one point Obama has the spectacularly condescending, Hillary, you're likable enough. You kind of wonder if at some point the likability factor could end up being a potential challenge for Hillary in the Democratic primary, to say nothing of in the general election.
I'm sure she'll read a statement about how likable she is at some point if that becomes an issue.
A brief issued statement, no questions taken.
Yes, exactly. All right. On to the bad martini now, and this ties in a little bit with some bad news that we knew was coming at some point but came out yesterday, and that's the U.S. and Cuba will reopen mutual embassies later this month, July 20th. Essentially, the more we learn about this reestablishment of diplomatic relations, we're changing a lot of policies and Cuba is changing virtually nothing other than the fact that they did let out Alan Gross, who was in a Cuban prison for more than 5 years. But here's the really weird twist to this that the Daily Beast has uncovered. So kudos to James Kirchick and the Daily Beast for figuring out this story. After spending more than 5 years in a Cuban jail, former USAID contractor Alan Gross is probably in possession of a lot of information that the United States government would like to know. How did Cuban officials become aware of his work bringing internet access to the island's tiny Jewish community? What were the conditions like inside the Valle Marista prison where he was held? Yet, according to an authoritative source, no U.S. government official has debriefed Gross since he was released from a Cuban jail last December as part of a broader deal normalizing relations between the United States and Cuba. The State Department is declining to comment on whether or not Gross has been debriefed more than 6 months after finally coming home. Jim, obviously this is another example where the Obama administration has no idea how to negotiate, but I think a basic kindergarten understanding is that you would want to talk to this guy about what he went through for so many years.
There's a phrase that occasionally used on the internet. You see it attached to memes and graphics and things like that. And it says, I can't even, in the sense that I can't even finish the sentence. Yes. I can't even, I'm so full of incredulity and disbelief and anger and frustration that I can no longer deal with this. I just have to walk away. I look at that news, Greg, and it's a very, I can't even moment. I can't even, I should be mad. I'm not. I just want to shake your head and just say I'm done with you people. You just can't do basics. What's the explanation for that? This was allegedly one of the great successes of our Cubo deal. Was that they got the guy back and nobody actually bothered to talk. What are you doing all day? Put down the selfie stick, Mr. President. You know this, and on top of the OPM hack and things like that. I mean the Cuba deal is terrible. Our government shows signs of just criminal incompetence and you know malfeasance every day. But then something like this, you're just left. Amateur hour just almost doesn't seem to do it, Greg.
I guess not. You know, we just talked yesterday about Sid Blumenthal's excessive role, which anything other than nothing would have been excessive under the Obama administration's rules. And we're talking about how Hillary Clinton needed to leave things to the professionals, or at least rely on professionals to give her better advice on how to handle different things in the world. Apparently, the professionals aren't much better, because if this is how they handled the Cuba thing, I'm not sure we can really trust them to handle any basic function of diplomacy.
Did they forget? You know, was it on the post-it note and the came unglued and it fell under the desk? You know, make sure we talk to the guy who we put, you know, we made this enormous concessions to get out. Why wouldn't you do that? Did they have a lot going on? Was somebody out sick? I mean, how do you miss something that seems as glaringly important as that? And, you know, as usual, no explanation is forthcoming. No one will get fired. No one will get disciplined. You know, nothing matters anymore. They just keep doing what they're doing.
All right, on to the crazy martini now.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm.
The craziness continues in terms of response to everything Confederate flag related has to be gone, and it's got onto other issues now. Yesterday, TV Land announced it was pulling Dukes of Hazzard reruns because of the fact that the Confederate flag is featured in the series. Jim, you and I are roughly the same age. I was a huge fan of the Dukes of Hazzard. I can't think of one episode where there was, you know, a racial issue in the show or that the flag was used in any crazy way. It's just a fun show. It's kind of a farcical show. If you watch it now as an adult, you kind of almost wonder why you loved it so much back in the day. But it was a great show to watch as a kid. And so the Dukes of Hazzard apparently is racist now. And at the same time, as much as we make fun of Donald Trump, you know, he made that comment at his presidential announcement speech about the people pouring in across the border. He certainly didn't say it very diplomatically. He's talking about drug dealers and rapists and some good people coming across the border. And so as a result of that, Univision has cut its ties with Trump. No more Miss USA or Miss Universe pageant. NBC has cut his ties. And now Macy's has decided not to carry Donald Trump ties in any other clothing line that's part of that. So, Jim, we're at the point now where any political disagreement is basically cause for banishment from the public square, it seems like.
Yeah, it actually gets worse, Greg. I'm not making this up. Apparently, he had some deal with Serta mattresses. I'm not kidding. There was some sort of like Trump the mattress that you could get. They have decided they're no longer dealing with it. And apparently, New York City is reviewing any contracts it has with Trump and his corporations. This looks like the de Blasio. You can, you know, take your pick of you know, jihad, pogrom, whichever term is most offensive and causes you to call for a boycott of Three Martini Lunch. At some point, the left decided that something that was once seen as a social wrong, saying something insensitive, and no two ways about it, what Trump said was insensitive. It was a jerky way of putting it. If it was a hyperbolic statement, there was a certain amount of truth to it, which is to say, one, yeah, you do have gang members and criminals and rapists coming across the border. According to statistics from the CIS and immigration services, it's several hundred. You know, this is not an insignificant amount of crime that comes across the border. Secondly, as my boss Rich Lowry writes today, you look at the statistics of people who come across the border, 60-some percent are coming across with no – having not finished high school education. 10% of Mexican immigrants have about some college, and about 1% has a college degree. Not that surprising. You know, it kind of confirms what we would suspect here. But as a result, we are importing people who do not have a great deal of education in an economy that really requires skills and knowledge and things like that. So we shouldn't be surprised. So when Donald Trump says they're not sending us their best, that's not a terribly harsh assessment. They may be decent folks. They may be very hardworking folks. In fact, the numbers for men between the teens and their 60s, more immigrant men are working in that demographic than non-immigrant men. So it's not that they're all terrible people, but we, you know, if you can ask that question of, hey, is it really in the best interest of the United States to be importing large numbers of unskilled workers? Many people would say, no, it's not in our interest to do that. But this is basically being driven out. You're not allowed to have that conversation because everybody's got to punish Donald Trump for having the audacity to bring it up in a way that offended some people. This is one of the ways the left is really making these efforts to draw, that statement is beyond the pale. Well, the pale is starting to look at the size of a postage stamp right now when we've decided that the Duke boys, who literally, we are assured in the song, never meant any harm.
Exactly.
Are you know, this symbol of racism who have to be taken off the airwaves, you know? I think it was Ala Pundit who written something who said, you know, Bo, how come we don't have any black friends? It's kind of funny to look at whether, you know, here's a portrayal of Hazzard County, Georgia in the mid to late 70s. And I don't know if were there any black characters, Greg, do you recall?
There was a black sheriff of a neighboring county who, I might add, while the Duke boys foiled him every time they encountered each other, he was far more competent than Roscoe Coltrane.
Yeah, well, there you go. Roscoe, the deputy, also Boss Hogg, right? I mean,
sure.
Boss Hogg is
basically
every negative Southern stereotype.
Yes.
In one, you'd think the left would like that, right? And he's the bad guy. A portrayal of law enforcement as malicious and abusive and incompetent in light of Black Lives Matter and everything else. Isn't this kind of in the anti-police protest? Isn't this in their wheelhouse? But anyway, there we go. There's a great opportunity there for, you know, discussion as the 4th of July comes up of what are American freedom of expression, you know, values, and why, or should you be economically punished for saying something that other people disagree with? People are free to boycott this. It's not like there's a law requiring Macy's and NBC to work with Trump. But the idea of saying, well, no, you've said something we disagree with, thus we're never going to associate with you again, it doesn't seem to be a very good formula for a country that's going to have freedom of expression. It's a great thought for us to close on as we head into Independence Day weekend.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Happy 4th of July, everyone. We'll be back on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.